Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Florida United Businesses Association. FUBA is a statewide trade association representing Florida businesses. FUBA also publishes The Advisor, a pocket-sized guide to the Florida legislature. More at fuba.org. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
With big health care changes looming, what happens to Medicaid patients?
My goal wouldn't be to reduce benefits. It would be to do the same kind of measures that are done in private plans to have incentives.
Also tonight, Florida's 15-year-old class size amendment has cost the state many billions of dollars, and some in the legislature say it's time to try something else.
It does make sense on a common sense level. However, you have to think about how districts have responded.
We'll also get the latest on ride sharing and vacation rental regulations, as well as beefing up protections to save more kids from abusive situations. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's day two of week two in the Florida 2017 lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. In 2011, the Florida legislature passed a measure to convert Medicaid insurance into a managed care system. But Republican lawmakers now want to take the program away from what they call big businesses and change it into a block grant system. But as Sarah Mueller reports, Medicaid providers say if that happens, low-income families will lose access to health care.
A lot of lobbying goes on at Florida's Capitol. But it's hard to miss former basketball star Irving Magic Johnson hoofing it from office to office. The 6'9" athlete is a minority stakeholder in Simply Healthcare, a Medicaid-managed care company based in Miami. It's looking to get its contract renewed with the state. Here's Johnson's pitch to Senate President Joe Negron.
It was important that we got into the community, and I think that's what sets us apart from everybody else. You know, getting into the community, having those community town hall meetings, making sure we talk to the whole community, even if you wasn't one of our patients, but we were still talking to the community.
Florida lawmakers are making similar arguments for block grants that they made 6 years ago for managed care. For the first time since 2001, Republicans controlled the White House and both houses of Congress. Republican state lawmakers, including Governor Rick Scott, are asking Congress to block grant Medicaid money to them as Congress weighs changes to federal health policy. House Speaker Richard Corcoran says block grants are the solution. He says Florida could expand health care access by giving Medicaid recipients a fixed amount of money to buy coverage on the open market.
Tremendous access for those working poor to get a health insurance product or a health product to help with them with their health care needs that they would right now currently cannot get under the current system.
But just a few years ago, he was calling managed care the solution. This was Corcoran in 2011 on Medicaid managed care.
The reason I'm supporting this bill more than any other reason is the quality measures. The quality of care will be better.
Enrollment continues to increase, and so has the price tag. Medicaid managed care didn't produce the savings Florida Republicans promised it would. But a block grant could mean Florida gets less money from the program than it does today. For Melanie Sellers, the idea of cuts is frightening. She directs maternity services at Jackson Hospital in Marianna. She says most of the pregnant women served by the hospital are covered by Medicaid.
So much stuff is caught early on and treated. If they are not able to receive the prenatal care, then we would see more morbidity and mortality among the mom and the unborn child.
Right now, the federal government picks up about 60% of Medicaid costs in the state. Restricting more federal dollars means the state has to increase its share of program costs or cut benefits. That means slashing the number of people getting services or the number of services. Senate President Joe Negron, who now supports block grants, was the chief architect of the managed care system. But he acknowledges under block grants, cuts are possible.
My goal wouldn't be to reduce benefits. It would be to do the same kind of measures that are done in private plans to have incentives.
Yet, according to the Florida Hospital Association, Florida is dead last in Medicaid spending for children. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Mueller.
The price tag for Florida's class size amendment is now at $34 billion. The state has spent that much since the measure was put into the Florida Constitution by voters 15 years ago, and since that time, it's caused headaches for schools and districts which undergo the tricky task of trying to meet the levels. Now, as Lynn Hatter reports, state lawmakers are trying again to grant districts a little more wiggle room when it comes to class size.
The legislature tried in 2010 to loosen the state's class size mandates by asking voters to change the Constitution, but the issue failed on the ballot. After that, they decided to go in legislatively, loosening requirements for charter schools alone. This year, Republican Representative Ralph Mazzullo wants to give that same flexibility to all schools.
So that should save our state a good bit of money. Plus, it would provide flexibility for the districts, the teachers, in planning their classes, and the students in their educational experience.
Current class size laws specify only 18 kids can be in each pre-kindergarten through third grade class. 22 kids can be in a fourth through eighth grade classroom. And there's a max of 25 kids per class in high school. It seems a reasonable expectation. But in reality, administrators often jump through hoops and hurdles to make the figures work, says Indian River School Board member Sean Frost.
They've responded in four basic ways. They paid the fine because it was less than the cost of staffing up at those levels. They performed the Herculean task of balancing these issues and overhiring.
And districts have often reclassified schools and classrooms to take advantage of exemptions. Meanwhile, the state has often tinkered with the law. It's reduced the types of classrooms that fall under the amendment and reduced penalties and fines. Studies from organizations like the Brookings Institution have found class sizes have little impact on student performance. That's a point noted by Frost, who also represents the conservative Florida Coalition of School Board Members.
It was not necessarily based. The literature does not support that that it results in better outcomes. It does, you know, it does make sense on a common sense level. However, you have to think about how districts have responded.
But Democratic Representative Joseph Abruzzo worries trying to work around an established constitutional mandate could lead to more problems than fixes. Abruzzo also worries there's not enough support for the measure in the Senate.
Your Senate sponsor has four stops, and it has not even been agendaed, has not been heard. So the chances, although it could happen, are probably not likely this year, and I'm not comfortable voting yes on changing the voors' intent without some more information.
Still, Representative Mazzullo argues now is the time to be bold.
Within the parameters of the law, we need to come up with ideas that work better for our state, provide more flexibility for our schools, to unleash and actually release the power that's in the school system.
In 2015, the State Board of Education made a pitch for changing class sizes that went nowhere. And in the past, organizations like the State Teachers Union have viewed efforts to change the law as a way for the legislature to take money away from public schools. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Lawmakers and traffic safety advocates gathered in the state capitol today. They were supporting legislation that would expand the mandatory use of ignition interlock devices in cars driven by drunk driving offenders. As of right now, 28 states and Washington, D.C. require people to use interlocks to start their cars, beginning with a first drunk driving offense. But in Florida, this requirement exists only for repeat offenders and those who blow more than a 0.15 blood alcohol concentration, which is nearly double the legal limit of 0.08. The legislation would also create additional penalties for drivers who refuse to submit to breath, blood, or urine sobriety tests, including fines, probation, and points assessed against the person's driver's license. So far, neither the House nor Senate bill has been heard by any legislative committee during the 2017 session. Still to come on Capitol Report, state lawmakers are looking into ways to better protect young abuse victims.
I've had mothers tell me that my dog was the difference in their child being able to get through this and to have a positive memory instead of a negative memory of what happened to him.
The argument Florida needs one unified policy for ride-hailing services appears to be gaining ground in the state Senate.
And so it would be very difficult to operate a business in that type of environment where you don't know where your next pickup and drop-off is going to be.
A bill moving through the Florida Senate would prevent local governments from making rules specifically for vacation rentals.
We've seen an obscene amount of ordinances with local government, which basically, in my opinion, is a property rights taking.
And state lawmakers are once again trying to tear down the wall between grocery stores and liquor stores, but critics say well-funded special interest groups are behind the plan, not popular opinion.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
Bills to help some of the state's most vulnerable Floridians, as well as youthful offenders, have passed their first Senate committees, Sasha Cordner reports.
How do you sit?
Cosmo is an 11-year-old border collie who used to be a ranch dog. He's since retired and has been a therapy dog for 5 years with his team partner Tanya Cody, who asked him to sit earlier. Both are part of a long-standing program called the Florida Courthouse Therapy Dogs, the largest and oldest courthouse therapy dog program in the state. Chuck Mitchell, who leads the Tallahassee program, says he's worked with his own dog for about 10 years in the courts on many cases.
I've had prosecutors tell me that my dog was the difference in their ability to get a conviction and to get a predator off the streets. I've had mothers tell me that my dog was the difference in their child being able to get through this and to have a positive memory instead of a negative memory of what happened to them.
Current law allows for trial court judges to permit sexual abuse victims, typically young, to use a service or therapy animal. Some circuits in the state have taken advantage of the statute, like Leon County. But not included in the law is allowing service or therapy animals for other cases like child abuse, abandonment, and neglect, though some circuits are already doing that anyway. So Plantation Democratic Senator Lauren Book, a child sex abuse survivor and advocate, is hoping to update the statute, which also expands the type of specialized court-trained animals who can help child victims.
The bill allows a court to permit a victim or witness to testify with the assistance of a facility dog like Cosmo in a proceeding involving a sexual offense.
Another bill to help young sex trafficking victims has also passed the Senate Criminal Justice Committee. It's by Hialeah Republican Senator Rene Garcia. He says a report notes children in the foster care system who are identified as human trafficking victims are tracked and receive services through the Florida Department of Children and Families. But those same protections don't exist for kids not involved in the child welfare system.
So what we're doing with Senate Bill 852 is exactly that, is making sure that we can track, identify these children that fall, that are outside of the non-dependent system, and ensure that they receive the services to hopefully make sure that they don't fall back into the human trafficking, become victims of human trafficking again.
The last measure by Altamont Springs Republican Senator David Simmons aims to correct what he calls a glitch in Florida law. Today, if a person commits a crime before they were 21, they'd be eligible for a youthful offender sentence. But if they turn 21 as they await sentencing, they would no longer be eligible.
So Simmons' bill changes that to say if the person committed the felony before they turned 21, the court can impose a youthful offender sentence. Pinellas County Public Defender Bob Dillinger represents the Florida Public Defender Association.
It shouldn't be dependent on whether the case somehow got postponed till you're over 21 and you can't get youthful offender sentences.
Dillinger says it also allows these individuals to benefit from educational and employment services for youth. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
A Senate panel is giving the thumbs up to a measure establishing statewide regulations for ride-hailing services like Uber and Lyft. Nick Evans has that story.
Lawmakers have been trying for 4 years to set up a single system for ride-hailing apps. Companies like Uber and Lyft pride themselves on their ability to disrupt antiquated industries by providing more tailored services at lower costs. But a handful of municipalities approving ordinances regulating the companies was all it took to undermine their business model. St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis is backing a bill to supersede those local measures.
This bill eliminates the patchwork of local regulations on ride-sharing, establishing a statewide standard for operation of TNCs.
TNC means Transportation Network Company, the statutory term for businesses like Uber. Brandis argues drivers cross municipal borders all the time, and they need to know they're operating within the law.
Let me just take my example of Pinellas County. We have Pinellas, Pasco, Hillsboro, all within a stone's throw of each other in certain points. And you could have three different type of regulations in every one of those counties. So if you operated in Pinellas predominantly, but then there was some sporting event in Hillsboro, you'd have to go fall under their rules. And if there was some event in Pasco, you'd have to fall under their rules. And so it would be very difficult to operate a business in that type of environment where you don't know where your next pickup and drop off is going to be.
But as the new entrants square off against legacy companies, cities and counties are trying to fend off what they see as state overreach.
The Florida League of Cities fundamentally opposes preemption of local government, and under this legislation, cities and counties would have zero authority to regulate or address concerns with transportation network companies.
That's Megan Sirjane Samples from the Florida League of Cities, a lobbying organization for various localities across the state. Their arguments for local control, stiffer background checks, and insurance requirements are much the same as they were in previous years. But a more persuasive voice has Fort Lauderdale Democrat Perry Thurston's ear.
I support this bill, and I think that there is a need for a uniform standard around the state. But I also want to say that I support it because my wife, who travels extensively, has kind of put her thumb on the scale in terms of what she thinks about this legislation, and she normally doesn't even do that.
Even as the broad strokes of this year's debate echo arguments from previous years, new issues are coming to the fore. Here's another Fort Lauderdale Democrat, Gary Farmer.
What we're asking for is 0.5% of TNC gross revenue go to the state, and then it be redistributed to the counties for the provision of disability transportation.
Farmer explains Broward County struggles to provide transportation for its disabled community, particularly in terms of paratransit. Brandis's measure passed the Senate committee, but Farmer's amendment did not. Uber spokesman Javier Corioso believes the approval is something of a milestone.
Yeah, we're very optimistic. Obviously, this is a big step forward. It's the first time that a Senate committee passes a ride-sharing bill. We have two more stops. We still have to go to the Judiciary Committee and the Rules Committee, but we're very optimistic.
It's a small win, but after the past few weeks, Uber will probably take what it can get. A wave of customers deleted the app during President Trump's travel ban. A female software engineer recounted a year's worth of ongoing systemic sexual harassment, and CEO Travis Kalanick was caught on video screaming at one of his company's drivers. Meanwhile, competitor Lyft is in Tallahassee, and it's timed its arrival to correspond with the opening of the legislative session. Both businesses, and whatever future companies come along to disrupt them, stand to benefit from a statewide TNC policy. After 4 years of effort, it seems as though Florida lawmakers may be ready. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Renting a ride isn't the only issue state lawmakers are wrestling with. Vacation rentals, such as Airbnb, make up a growing industry in Florida. One state lawmaker says he has a plan to ensure they can continue to flourish.
In the city of Holmes Beach, officials say more than a quarter of the houses are now listed as vacation rentals. In Miami, the number of homes available for rent through services like Airbnb tops 14,000. But whether that's a good thing depends on who you ask.
Having this large traffic of transient visitors through the neighborhood, I think, changes the character of the neighborhood in a way that injures the property values and the property rights of the people in that neighborhood.
Armando Ibarra represents the Greater Miami and the Beaches Hotel Association. He joined a chorus of voices in the Agriculture and Property Rights Subcommittee Tuesday, pushing back against a measure from St. Cloud Republican Representative Mike LaRosa that would bar local governments from passing ordinances focused specifically on vacation rentals.
We've seen an obscene amount of ordinances with local government, which basically, in my opinion, is a property rights taking, which says, okay, you bought this property for this reason, but we're going to create all these ordinances, some that are going to be crazy fines to inhibit you from renting your property as a vacation rental.
Lori Killinger works for the Florida Vacation Rental Managers Association. She says cities are passing rules that are making it nearly impossible for property owners to use their property as they intended. And she says those rules are misguided.
Because at the end of the day, it's really not the use as a vacation rental that is the problem. It's people that are the problem. I'm sorry to say, bad neighbors are bad neighbors, no matter what. So, if you have a parking problem, too many cars in the street, what's the difference if it's because you're a short-term renter or you live there full-time? If you are a partier, what's the difference if you're a long-term renter or a short-term renter?
Representative LaRosa says he's not precluding local governments from creating rules pertaining to noise level or parking. He simply wants those rules to apply whether the problem is occurring at a person's home or a vacation home.
What I'm saying here is not that these are all horrible things. What I'm saying is treat vacation rentals the same as all other properties. Because whether it be a trash issue, where folks are leaving the trash cans outside, whether it's a noise issue, whether it's too many cars parked in the driveway or out in the street, treat all properties the same way and create that ordinance. And I think that's better. That's best for the folks that are living there full time, the folks that may be renting there long term, or the folks that just may be renting there for the weekend or for the week.
But leaders in some communities disagree. Carrie Roth represents the city of Holmes Beach. She believes local governments are best suited to oversee and create rules for their local properties.
If there are communities that have gone more restrictive than we would like here on a statewide level, I think they'll probably thrash those problems out on the local level if given some time.
The measure passed the House committee. A similar measure is awaiting a first committee hearing in the Senate. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Hundreds of women gathered at the state capitol in Tallahassee today, hoping to close what they deem is a gender pay gap in Florida. Legislation filed earlier this year in advance of the 2017 session would ban employers from paying workers a different salary based on their gender when other factors like experience and skill sets are the same. Supporters of the plan say women make just 87 cents for every dollar earned by a man doing this same job. So far, the measure has not been taken up by any House or Senate committee. Still, supporters like Democratic State Representative Lori Berman feel the bill would be approved if it were simply put on the agenda. Under the measure, pay differences would still be allowed for things like expanded education and experience. Similar legislation has been filed by Democrats in previous legislative sessions, but to no avail. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, a contentious plan to let grocery stores sell liquor is still alive in the Florida State House, but some are dismissing the issue as insider baseball and not a real public priority. Kate Payne has the story.
Florida lawmakers are once again trying to repeal a prohibition-era law that builds a wall between hard liquor and less risque groceries.
Almost a century later, this outdated law is still in place.
House sponsor Brian Avila, a Hialeah Republican, says the law is bad for business. But many in the chamber are conflicted over the moral and economic implications. Should they defend a law that limits the free market or support a plan they fear promotes corporate welfare and underage drinking? Private citizen Teresa Miller made the main moral arguments against the bill.
I'm sure everyone here knows at least one person, if not more, struggling with addiction or in recovery. Do we really want to tempt them with liquor in a store where they have to shop for their food? Do we really want our children to see alcohol as part of an everyday event when they go grocery shopping?
Erin Holmes is with the Foundation for Advancing Alcohol Responsibility. She says at least with underage drinking, retailers by and large aren't the problem, citing a 2005 American Medical Association survey.
The online survey showed that 2 out of 3 teens claimed it was easy to obtain alcohol from their parents' homes, either with or without their knowledge, or from relatives and siblings aged 21 or older.
Independent liquor store owners worry the bill will make it easier for big box retailers to take over the market. But Christian Camara with the free market think tank R Street is challenging that.
Again, there's no basis for this claim, as states without such a barrier law have robust and thriving liquor store markets. In fact, most of these states, the small retailers, have a majority of the liquor store licenses and thus greater market share than the big box retailers. This would be especially true in Florida, given our alcohol quota system that's not at all affected by this bill.
Liquor store owner Rory Eggers represents the Florida Independent Spirits Association, and he thinks the issue shouldn't even be on the table. He says the debate comes from the deep pockets of Walmart and Target, not any public need.
Other than in committee rooms such as this, I have never heard any customer or taxpayer complain about the extreme difficulties and hardships that they've had to overcome to purchase alcohol. There's simply no outcry for this bill.
Lawmakers have been weighing the issue for years. But Representative James Grant, a Tampa Republican, says the debate is irrelevant and resistance is futile. The real threat, he says, is online delivery services like Drizzly.
If we're going to have a narrative about the proliferation of alcohol or the impulse buy of alcohol, and we're not going to take very seriously the fact that it is completely legal and happening in our backyard, that on-demand mobile delivery of liquor is happening, then I think we're missing the ball, members. And that's why I'll be supporting this bill today. So thank you.
The measure barely passed its second committee stop Tuesday with a 7-6 vote. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport and join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Florida United Businesses Association. FUBA is a statewide trade association representing Florida businesses. FUBA also publishes The Advisor, a pocket-sized guide to the Florida legislature. More at fuba.org. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.